It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And America's favorite soccer dad is away but not gone. Or is he gone but not away? I don't know. He's with us in spirit and in voice remotely from out in the western suburbs where, what, both kids playing today?
They are, yeah. Only one is playing on this side of town in Fleming Island, but yes, they are.
Okay. So putting a few miles on the car today, huh?
We've got four games, and of course they are. We'll be crisscrossing Jacksonville multiple times today. I'll put it that way.
Man, I can't tell you how good that sounds, the part about you doing that instead of me.
Well, at least it's a beautiful day.
It is that, man. This is the best. So, love it. Anybody who's still suffering through all the bad weather we've had across the country, you ought to be here.
No doubt about it. It is so nice here.
You know, all those CPAC people who got turned away from Maryland, I guess, and they decided to go to Orlando. Gee, who won that one? Aside from the state of Florida. Yeah, no kidding. Love it. But anyway, all the regulars, thank you for always being there for us. You know how important you are. And if you're new to the show, maybe you're down for CPAC or just driving around soccer games or whatever, try to stick around for the whole hour, and we'll try to make sure that you learn something before the day is up. We will, of course, as always, have a trivia question, although I've got a choice of them today. I'll make my decision before the end of the first quarter, so I know which one we're going to do. But we've got a lot to follow up on from last week, and even more to follow up on from what's been happening in the Looney Tunes environment inside the Beltway. Man, it is just a week where you have more things to talk about than minutes to talk about them. But we'll do the best we can, and I want the audience to understand, no matter what we're talking about, all you got to do if you want to change the subject or get a question answered or just make a comment or a discussion, whatever, pick up the phone and dial 904-222-8255 or 222-TALK, and we will put the callers directly to the head of the line. Now, this week in the market, anybody who sort of follows the market probably understands that this week ended with a giant thud. Lost about 1,000 points on the Dow in the last couple of days and that sort of thing. What will surprise you is how the month itself turned out and how the year-to-date has turned out. Things aren't looking that bad out there. So I'll let Adam get into that, describe a little bit of the weekly goings-on, which really did start out looking like it was going to be another fun week, but that's life. That's the secret to the market. You never know.
No, you sure don't. And this week was a little different, though. It was interest rates that were the talk of the town. Interest rates shot up, I'll put it that way. And specifically, the 10-year Treasury, it started the week it rose to over 1.5%, and then it slipped back down on Friday to 1.4%. And that was over 1 month ago. It was at 1%. So it has climbed about 50% in 1 month, which when you're talking interest rates, is a pretty astronomical rise. So that type of thing is, in the short term, stocks are not going to like that. They don't like it when they see interest rates rising, and specifically interest rates rising that quickly. However, if you go back and look at what has happened in the year following rises like that, it's been pretty good for the market. So don't think that this little short-term event is going to turn into a long-term downtrend. Now, I'm not saying that won't happen, but the statistics would favor that the market will react favorably to this in the long term.
Well, the reason for that is simple, and it's something that if you were listening to Angela and Howard, they touched on it, and I just crossed paths with them on the way in here, and I told them there was going to be more on this. The interest rate rise, which affects them, of course, as much as most people, because the real estate business is dependent on that, the rise in interest rates has an underlying cause that's very positive. It's the good news in the economy. Therefore, right, when rates rise, you've got, as you said, the short-term shock, But you've also got the economy surrounding this thing is quite good. That's why these interest rate increases are generally followed by good times in the market.
No doubt about it. And you'll see a little bit of what's driving this when I get to it in a minute, because there was a ton of economic data this week, and it was almost all fantastic.
That was the longest list I've seen in a long time.
With a lot of green.
A lot of green in there. Sea of green.
Which is good. And then the earnings season just sort of unofficially wrapped up in the last week, and man, those numbers are fantastic too. So there's just a lot of good news out there, and it's showing how strong this economy really is. In fact, you just started to hear this week a little bit of debate about whether another stimulus is even needed. And I'm kind of in the camp that a really targeted stimulus we could use, but do we need a broad-reaching one right now? I don't know if we really need to spend $2 trillion at this point.
No, I'll go further than that. We don't. How's that?
There are still people out there hurting, so I want to help them.
$1.9 trillion with 12 zeros could be $170 billion with 9 zeros for the simple reason that that's the only portion of it that's allocated to COVID relief.
Yeah.
It's 9% of the total. The rest of it is nothing more than Democrat pork, period.
This is true. And that's the problem here. But you can't pass a bill this big without having a bunch of pork in it. That goes on both sides of the aisle. But the question just really is, do we even need it anymore? And my vote is, I don't think so.
Some people do, but you could target something like that on a small group basis and not have anything to do with a massive mess like this.
But sure.
It's a good word.
You know how that's not how things work in Washington.
No.
Anyways, so there was a lot of underlying shuffling in the market as well this week. Despite the drop, there were some clear winners and some clear losers. And the clear loser was technology. We saw the NASDAQ really take it on the chin, down almost 5%. The good news is that the NASDAQ has been leading the market higher and is still up 2.4% for the year. Now, that was part of a broader trend where growth stocks really were rotated out of this week and value was in favor again. That's more of a trend that you're going to see a little bit more moving forward, although I would not count out tech stocks at this point. I think tech is going to have a really bang up year, and I think it's going to be a little bit too attractive for people to just stay out of entirely. The S&P dropped by 2.4%, and the Dow was down 1.8%. Both are still positive for the year by more than 1%. It was a bad week, but it really didn't kill you to stay invested this week. I think that there are definitely brighter times ahead.
I agree. And you know that you say it's up year to date, which it is. All the numbers are green year to date. But look at the month. The month shocked me. The Dow was up 3.2, NASDAQ up 0.9%, and the S&P was up 2.6 after that fall. So
yep.
This market is anything but rolling over and playing dead. As you said, it was a short-term reaction. This takes me back to some things we did a few years ago about the politics that interfere for a few days at a time will cause some reactions. I'm going to finish that up right after the break. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And Adam is, as you may have heard, phoning in from his duties as the soccer dad of the world, but I might add a really good connection today too.
So. Yeah, it helps when you're local and in a highly populated area.
Does indeed. Well, we've got a little bit more to cover about the market this week. It was very, very interesting. And I think, Adam, if you want to highlight the earnings season that just closed, that'd be a good place to start. The theme today is sort of, good news is causing this, and I was saying right before the break, we started talking about this about 3 years ago, where politics does affect the market, but only in the short term. What affects the market in the long term is economics. Therefore, we will touch on the politics, but you need to understand what the underlying economics are, and that's where this comes from.
Yeah, the underlying economics are looking really good. Earnings season unofficially wrapped up last week when Walmart reported, but actually 344 more companies reported quarter four results this week. The earnings rate ended up at 76%, which is an extremely strong measure by almost no matter how you look at it. There's only been three other quarters that have been stronger than that and since this data started getting tracked. The revenue beat rate was even stronger at 75.5%, and not stronger numerically, but considering that the revenue beat rate is typically well below the earnings beat rate, more in the 50 to 60% range, so 75 is just off the charts. On top of that, there are very few companies that lowered guidance, with 15% more companies raised their guidance going forward than lowered this quarter. That is also towards a near a record number of companies, and it also speaks really well for first quarter earnings for the quarter that we're in right now. So 2021 really couldn't have gotten off to a better start if you're just looking at earnings.
Yeah, this little mess this week, the last couple of days, that's just a quick reaction to the statistics, the interest rate statistics. Their interest rates are still historically very low, and you should know that. In fact, that brings up our trivia question. At today's home prices and interest rates and hourly wages, how many hours per month does the average non-supervisory worker, hourly worker, have to work to pay the mortgage? How many hours a month does the average worker have to work to pay his or her mortgage? And that is all related. And anyway, back to what you were saying.
Yeah, and on top of the earnings data, the economic data was plentiful this week, and it was almost all positive. We saw consumer confidence beat expectations, and it rose from last month. The Dallas Fed manufacturing report beat expectations by over 300%. Home prices rose more than expected across the country. New home sales topped expectations. Durable goods orders rose more than 300%. Jobless claims were lower than expected, and personal income rose by a pretty staggering 10%. If you're looking for a negative, there was a little bit. Personal spending rose less than expected, but was still up 2.4% versus a 2.5% expected. Pending home sales rose a little bit less than expected due to a lack of inventory, and GDP was revised up slightly less than expected to 4.1% versus an expectation of 4.2%.
Yeah, this is what economists call a miss. It was the first reading was 4.0%, so they expect the revision to be 4.2, and it's only 4.1, and that's a negative in economics. You wonder why they call it the dismal science?
Yeah. And then the same thing with personal spending. It was 2.4 versus 2.5 expected. So
exactly. And we have a call.
Misses weren't even misses.
Adam, excuse me. We have a call, and I want to take it.
Go ahead.
Leroy.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Hey, I thought I'd start off the bang here this morning with 42 hours.
Oh. You are very close, I would say, but you are not correct.
Okay, I expected that answer, but it gives everybody a start.
Well, you know, that it's kind of logic when you look at it, because you know what percentage of income people are supposed to have to spend on housing. So you're 42 out of, 160, whatever work week hours.
Right.
That's a very logical guess. It's not exactly right. It's not within my margin of error, we'll put it that way.
Of course not. Okay.
It would have been had it been somebody else, maybe. No, just kidding.
Well, it'll give somebody something to dive at there.
You got it. All right.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
You guys have a good day.
Yeah, have a beautiful weekend. Okay, now we know it's close. I didn't tell you whether it's up or down either because I want you to guess. Maybe we'll get a bracket on it. You never know. Anyways, sorry, Adam, for interruption, but carry on.
No, that was all I had for the market wrap today. Actually, one other thing, the COVID cases pretty much have been plummeting since January. But in the last 3 days, they actually ticked up a little bit. And the thought was that it could be from the winter storm keeping people in their homes over the last week. And finally, they're able to go out and get tested. And potentially, that's what caused the little uptick. But We're not really sure. It also caused a little bit of a flattening of the vaccine doses administered per day. It's been rising pretty steadily, and it was at about 1.5 million 2 weeks ago. And this last week, it actually was a little bit lower than that. However, a lot of that is just expected to be parts of the country that were hit by the winter storm were not able to administer as many doses as they had previously. So I don't think it's a long-term trend. I think that you'll see in the next 2 weeks that 1.5 million doses per day increase to 1.6 or 1.7.
There was a lot of interesting discussion throughout the news this past week also about when we can really get out of this stupid lifestyle, the masking and all that. And the estimates by the naysayers, Fauci and company, are that it could go into 2022, which is just categorically ridiculous.
It's wrong. It's wrong. It's not. It's. I don't even know why they would throw that around. It's. There's no legitimate estimate that would back that up.
What's the name for people who take great pleasure in other people's misery? I think anybody can come up with a word, but there's a whole slew of them out there. But the thinking types are saying that we are getting close, and they're targeting somewhere around April or May, because what people aren't factoring in is a very simple thing. They're looking at vaccine doses, and I've had both of mine. Your mom has one and about to get the second one. And there's a lot of people that we meet now that are fully vaccinated. Well, that's a good thing, but that's not the entire statistic. The other one is so many people have had this now, many of whom had no idea they had it, that there's a lot of immunity. And we think we're only catching 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 4 or 1 out of 5 at the outside cases and making them into the positive numbers. But there are so many hundreds of thousands of people out there who probably have the immunity built up from having a case that was asymptomatic or very mild. And when you add all those in, you're going to get to those herd immunity numbers a lot quicker than people are thinking. So one of these days, folks, we'll cross on the street and we can actually smile at each other. And that's going to be a really wonderful day, I think. And also, if you're speaking purely economically, you want to see the market react, just make the announcement that herd immunity has been reached and you're free to move about the planet. And you're going to see the market go crazy. So that's just a few things to keep in mind.
I don't think you're going to see an announcement like that. I think it'll be phased in over time. But the sentiment is correct. I think once things do start to open up and travel can resume, and you see businesses let business travel start again, that's going to be huge for the in terms of a boost to the economy.
Yeah. Now the political side of reopening businesses is starting to take place too, where it was categorically impossible for any kind of business to open up in certain places until you-know-who wasn't in the White House anymore. Well, all of a sudden, conditions are so much different. Although they won't describe what's really different, you know what's different. So there are places where people are opening their restaurants again, some outside only and some with limited capacity, and a lot of other smaller businesses are starting to open. So what you're going to see is some people, for instance, those who were working on the pipeline are getting laid off, but for each one of those, there's going to be a bunch more of them that have been able to go back to work. Now, whether this mess that we'll talk about a little bit with the $1.9 trillion is going to interfere with people actually going back to work, that remains to be seen. There could be a sizable disincentive in there. There's a few other things, too, that could ruin a good recovery, but they're going to take time because they're policy issues. So I would say between now and at least summertime, there's probably valid, at least a half a dozen valid reasons why I expect the market to move forward. I could be wrong. Anybody can be wrong at any given time. But for right now, you can color me on the optimistic side. How do you ruin it? Well, one of the easiest ways would be raising taxes. And one of the other ways would be maybe overspending and having to borrow too much money and making interest rates rise. All this stuff is going on. But that's all policy things. It takes a long time to come to fruition. So I wouldn't stick my neck out and say that next year will be as good as this year. But I'm not going to worry about what happens between right now and summertime, at least, because I think the positive markers in the economy are just way, way, way stronger than anything that couldn't be going on behind the scenes. So after the break, we'll get on to some other topics. The trivia question is still there. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. We will pay some bills and come back with a whole bunch of fun stuff. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanuy Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanuy Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanuy.
And I'm Adam Vanuy.
And Adam is connecting the dots on the map between soccer fields A, B, C, D, whatever today. But he's on the line and kicking and ready to go. All right, trivia question still open. How many hours does the average non-supervisory worker have to work in a month to pay the mortgage? This is, again, a great big group of people, and they're averaging out. And we know that 42 hours was not correct, but I have not told you which direction that's not correct yet. I will eventually. But then you probably won't win anything. All right, well, what can you do to mess this up? Well, there's a few things you can do, so I'm going to start out with a headline. First off, there, you know, my penchant for headlines and stupidity. I think we may have set a record this past Wednesday when Yahoo Finance announced this little gem. Jeff Bezos' mansion is larger than an entire city. And then the subhead, he spent half his net worth on this brand new mansion. Do you know what Jeff Bezos' net worth is, Adam?
I don't, but I can guarantee you there isn't a mansion in the world that would cost as much as half of his net worth.
Well, he's currently worth about $200 billion. So if I'm going to read the story because the headline drew me to it, I have to first believe it's worth my time to read about Jeff Bezos spending $100 billion on a new mansion.
Oh, yeah.
I did not waste my time, and I hope nobody else did either. Yahoo's always good for a kick, isn't it? So here's another one. Biden set to sign executive order to address chip shortages, supply chain crisis. The Wall Street Journal says, what happened? And I'm just kind of curious about that because it seems to me we've been hearing about this chip shortage for a long time. Companies like Tesla have had to shut down for a while. All the car companies are having a problem. A lot of different managers are having problems. And it seems that the Biden administration has figured this out and has actually done something about it. So we are theoretically saved. So he's got a couple of deals with Samsung and one other, I can't remember who it was right offhand, but to build chip factories in the U.S. How about that? One in New York and one out in Texas or Arizona or something. So I'm looking at this thinking, I don't remember any new deals being cut recently about these new factories that are being built in this country. Very interesting to me. So I looked it up. But these deals were announced in 2018 and 2019. So what's going on here? Are we thinking this administration is so user-friendly that all these companies now want to flock to our country and build these multi-billion dollar factories to make chips? Or is it just business as usual? Have to think about that one, huh? But not very long. This is, I tell you people, the difference in news reporting, it could not be more black and white between, well, the past 4 years and the last 2 months. And it's getting a little bit carried away, in my humble opinion. But I don't write the news, so what the heck. Yeah, well, that's a millennials. You are going to become the richest generation in history. Your parents, baby boomers, my group of people, we made a lot of money, apparently. Our net worth is massive, but it's partly because there's so darn many of us. But then there's that next generation down that was considerably smaller because a lot of us didn't get around to having 2.2 children. And all this wealth now is looking like it's going to go to the next generation in humongous numbers, partly because of the success of the people and partly because numerically it's a lot of people leaving a lot of money to fewer people. Well, I don't know how many of you understand the concept of a stepped-up basis, but I think a lot of people actually do. What that means is when you inherit something, you do not have a basis, meaning a cost basis. Most of you know what a cost basis is. If you buy a stock for $100 and it goes to whatever price, your basis is $100. Well, it's the same with a home or something. So if you had an inherited home, it, or stocks or anything else for that matter, it came to you at the basis, meaning its market value on the day of the death of the person who left it to you. Well, that could be pretty significant because, you know, some things were owned for a long, long time in the family. So let's see what that would mean to you. Let's say, offhand, that your parents recently died and they had purchased their house years ago for $40,000. You inherited it on the date of their death and the value was $200,000. Well, their basis of $40,000 becomes tax-free, which is really just inflation when you think about it, becomes your basis of $200,000. So say you get it cleaned up, fixed up, put it on the market, and you sell it for $205,000. Well, you made a gain of $5,000, a capital gain, the difference between your basis and the sale price. That capital gain at 20% would be $1,000 in taxes. And it might happen that your tax rate would be even 0 or 15. So worst case, you'd pay $1,000. Well, under Biden's proposition, which nobody is talking about yet, but it's there, you would eliminate the stepped-up basis. So, therefore, same person inherits the same house, gets a $200,000 street value, but a $40,000 carried-over basis. Now, that basis is going to carry on until you sell the house. So let's say down the line, you do the same thing. You sell it for $205,000. Well, what are you going to be taxed at after that sale? Not $5,000 at capital gains. You'll be paying money on a $165,000 gain for capital gains rate, which I'll promise you one thing. It takes away your zero tax bracket because that goes away for a couple at about $80,000. So automatically, you're going to jump over that, and it'll be at least 15, if not 20%. Now, 20% of $165,000 is a boatload of money, over $30,000. And this would be very insidious. I'm not talking about a very big transaction here at $205,000 sale. What if you inherit a brokerage account or something like that, $500,000, $1 million? And all the things in there on the day of your parents' death get a markup to their current market value. If this were to pass, that would not be true. So if your parents had purchased some, say, Home Depot or Walmart stock back 25 years ago and just let it ride, take the dividends, and the stock went up and up and up, I've seen basis numbers out there that were 5% or 10% of market value. Well, upon the death of the parent and the inheritance by the beneficiary, all of a sudden, that market value is also your basis. So you get a full step up and you get no tax penalty for selling these things unless it's for the small gain that you made on top of that. But under the Biden ripoff plan, you would pay taxes on the difference between what your parents paid for. So let's say you pick up $500,000 worth of Walmart stock that they've got a $50,000 basis in. Well, you're going to owe taxes on the $450,000. And I don't know about you, but paying taxes on an inflationary gain that you didn't own for many, many years seems to me to be digging just a little too deeply into the back pockets of Americans. This is one we're going to keep watch on, and we're going to tell you if it gets into a bill very quietly or however it might happen to be brought up, what you can do about it or who you can make noise to or whatever. But of all the insidious things that are going on out there, and they are legend, they're deep and awful, this one to me would be one of the most unfair of all tax changes, and it's going to hurt the generation that really needs it because their kids are needing it very badly. We are leaving them a debt down to those grandchildren of ours that just is going to get a lot bigger with this $1.9 trillion. So I'll touch on some more fun stuff when we get back. This is the Van Wee. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I want to remind everybody that the trivia question brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm, 904-636-7888. And it says, how many hours per month are required for the average non-supervisory hourly worker to pay the mortgage at today's averages for prices and interest rates? And we know that 42 now, because it's getting later in the show, I'm going to give you the hint. 42 is a little too low. And the reason I'm bringing this up today is because last time we did this, and Alan remembered it, I was very proud of him. He said that last time that we did this, it was 35 hours. And that tells you exactly what's going on. Prices are going up, interest rates are going up, and they're rising faster than hourly wages are. So if you're thinking of buying, get out there and do it. Good morning. It looks like Marshall.
Steve, thank you so much for bringing up this stepped-up gain question.
It gives me
an opportunity to share the absolute dichotomy here.
Sure.
You're familiar with the term opportunity zones?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so Ben Carson and Tim Scott championed the idea of people taking what would have been paid in capital gains tax and invest it in low to moderate income neighborhoods that were called opportunity zones.
Right.
And your gain, if you left it in there long enough, the tax implication would be eliminated.
Hmm.
Not only did you get a nice return for your efforts, but you also stimulated the least wealthy parts of our economy.
Yes, with the lowest opportunity.
Yes. Because all they need in some of those communities is the investment.
Right.
And this put it to them. So,
yeah, well, you have to have an incentive to invest in a place that looks like one of the least likely places that you're ever going to get a good return. So if you start with a good return by doing the transaction, you can only go better from there, I would think.
Yeah. Well, there's the dichotomy of the two philosophies.
Yeah, Carson and Trump got together on that with a little help from a few of their friends, and it has been paying great premiums for a lot of people, but we don't know what his future is.
Well, even if it was truncated at its present obligation, it's going to be the absolute example of just how wealthier people can benefit less wealthy people in a positive economic scenario for both parties.
And one other thing, voluntarily.
Yes, yes.
I don't like them taking my money at gunpoint. I would much prefer that they give me a deal I can't refuse, like a gigantic return like that, which is also very likely to benefit both sides. So bringing people out of poverty and so on, it's good for the country, it's good for the national economy, it's good for the stock market and everything else. But I like it voluntary. That's the key. And this is what is not being talked about on the Hill right now. Everything they're talking about is the mandatory side. I'm talking about the voluntary side.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your morning education, sir.
Well, and thank you for bringing it up. Do you want to take a shot at the trivia, Marshall?
How about 44?
How about that? How about if I said that was within the range and you might be the winner? How's that one?
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
The range was 44, 45, 46, and it's the number's actually a little over 44. It's almost 45. And what has changed there is we've had almost a 10 working day increase in that average since prices started to rise, interest rates started to rise. But I should also point out that 45 is exceptionally low throughout the history of the country. So if anybody's thinking, as so many people are wont to do, that, oh my God, I blew it, it's too late, it is not too late. By any means, it is not too late. And with these mortgage rates being fixed at rates, I guess today they just popped over 3, according to Angela and Howard, but barely. That is historically, ask anybody 10 years older than you are if they would take a 3% mortgage today, and that they'll just roll their eyes. Man, if we could have done that when we were young, we were paying 18, 15, 22%, whatever. And this is such a historic opportunity. The biggest problem we have is supply. And that supply is going to start getting built again because summer's coming. So if you want to look at a place to maybe put some bucks, I think that the building industries, material industries are going to be a really, really good sector for a while. It's for you investors out there who are thinking about this stuff. Anyway, Marshall, I've got your address. I'll see to it that we send something out for Mr. Bales. And I appreciate your call as always. Enjoy the day.
Good luck to the soccer team.
All right. I'll pass that along, too.
See
ya. Yeah. That is quite a lot of time relative to before. And it's still very, very simple. The oldest rule of thumb was that you should spend about 25% of your income on housing. That quickly crept up to about 28%, and then the average number has been creeping up little by little until the real estate crisis and the financial crisis. I mentioned to Alan, we were talking about this, something that's very important. I said the only really, really predictable thing about economics is it's cyclical. The only thing that is forever is change, in other words. So whatever it is today, it'll be different next year at this time. You just don't know which direction. So you got to look at the opportunities that you have in front of you and decide what to do and maybe be just a little bit flexible. So anyway, back to real estate a little bit. If you were listening to the show last week, you were listening to Howard and Angela, who sell houses for a living. We got talking about a lot of interesting things, but one thing we talked about only off air, and I didn't get a chance to bring it up. If you're out shopping for a new construction house or a lot on which to build a house, here's something you're going to find in Jacksonville that I have never heard of before. But when some of the developers have their lots prepared and they're going into the selling phase, they'll sell 5 contracts, and then they'll raise the price 5% for the next 5. And when those are sold, they'll raise the price 5% for the next 5. And this keeps on going. So there seems to be such a demand right now that they can get away with this. And what it amounts to is that you could wind up being the neighbor of someone who paid, I'm just going to make up the numbers, $100,000 for the same lot that you've got. You might have paid $150,000. For it. So get there early. I guess the early bird is going to get that worm. But another thing that they said that caught my ear also was don't even think about being accompanied out there by your real estate agent. They will not talk to a real estate agent. They will not talk to you if you try to use a real estate agent. They're picking and choosing. Now, what does that tell me? It tells me something very significant. When things aren't as good as they are now, some of these people are going to come crawling back and begging the real estate agents to bring them some people. I think this is very short-sighted. You agree with that, Adam?
Yeah, it's typical though. The builders are they have a lot of games that they play with new homes. I mean, everyone knows that you go in and you look at the model and they tell you the base price, but they don't tell you what it would cost to build that model. There's maybe $100,000 worth of upgrades in that model that you haven't priced in.
Right.
There's lot premiums that suddenly pop up when you're in a good market. There's just all sorts of ways that builders will get you on a new house that aren't necessarily things that can happen to you if you buy an existing home.
Right. And there's some things going on also that aren't up to the builder, like the prices for lumber and copper and that sort of thing, which are escalating like crazy. I think lumber's up over 100% since this old boom started. So, like I said, if you're going to do this, whether you're buying existing or getting out there shopping around, you better be warned of what's going on and know that when you do show up, if you're interested in doing this, be pre-qualified, be ready to slap down a check and pay for it, or the guy behind you is going to be tossing you out of the way and taking it himself. Another thing to know is quick, we buy your homes. We'll buy any kind of home, even haunted is one of the newest ones. Just remember, you're going to probably get a number about 5 to 10% less than you could on the market. And you're going to pay a fee for this thing that is way above the realtor's fees. They run about 7 to 9% fees on this thing. So buyer beware. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. This is the Banwi Financial Hour.